You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hey there, Happy New Year. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Here in West Long Beach, at a busy intersection on PCH, the streets are full of trucks hauling shipping containers from the ports of Long Beach and Los Angeles onto the 710 freeway. A record number of these trucks and ships arrived at the ports last year, causing a supply chain backlog that started grabbing national attention during the fall. Toxic emission levels related to the ports also increased, and residents such as Ron Batiste say the families in his neighborhood are being choked by worsening air quality.
For people with children, I would tell them, minimize your time here.
Now, this neighborhood is surrounded by a lot of sources of pollution. Within 100 yards of his front door is a railway, truck yard, an oil refinery, and...
2 miles down this way is the port, and half a mile this way, not even a half mile, is the 710 freeway.
Now, the air has been dirty here for years, and the ports have a plan and goals to buy into electrification and try to clean things up. But for now, it's clean air versus a functioning supply chain. And moving cargo is winning. And so, that leaves Batiste wondering, when will the health of his community be a priority? KCRW's Megan Jamerson picks up the story from here.
Forgive me if it's hard for me to breathe.
No, please.
Batiste is sitting at his kitchen table in late December. He's never been diagnosed with a lung condition, but on this day, he's finding it hard to get a full breath. This happens sometimes, says Batiste, and part of the problem is his neighborhood's air quality. He points to the grime that collects daily around the sliding glass door and the AC vent, despite running an air purifier during the day.
It's not just dust. It's like the oil. And it's from all the emissions from the trains, trucking yards, and of course the refinery.
Batiste shrugs off his own health issues because he is more anxious about the neighborhood kids and their health. USC studies have shown living in an area like this with high pollution causes measurable lung damage in children.
It's no fun for me, and you know, an older person able to see the effect on younger generations. After all, that is our future.
Dr. Elisa Nicholas, a local pediatrician, agrees. This kind of environment is concerning for anyone. But children take more breaths per minute than adults, and their lungs are still growing.
And so when they're exposed to pollution, it has more effect on their lungs than an adult because they're getting a higher dosage of those pollutants.
Nicholas serves mostly low-income families in the portside communities of Wilmington, San Pedro, and West Long Beach. These communities are majority Black and Latino and face higher than average asthma rates and cancer related to air pollution.
And it's really, an environmental justice issue and a health equity issue.
And the health impacts are increasing. Last year, with the number of ships doubling at the ports, the state estimates there were 20 premature cardiovascular deaths linked to air pollution from fumes coming onshore. Overall, the state tallied big jumps in emissions from trains and trucks related to the ports, and also all those ships, saying in the first half of 2021, the increase in the diesel particulate and smog was like adding 100,000 diesel trucks and nearly 6 million passenger cars to the road. The ports broke records for the number of containers they processed in 2021, so the pollution totals for the entire year will be even higher. But it wasn't supposed to be this way. The ports were making some progress toward cleaning up before the backlog, through things like requiring ships to use lower emission fuels. That progress might not last, says Chris Cannon, the port's LA Director of Environmental Management. The quickest way to get back on track is to clear out the backlog, which should happen sometime this year.
And so we hope that that means our emissions numbers will start to be better. And certainly in 2023, we hope our numbers are back to normal.
At a December press conference, Mario Cordero, the head of the Port of Long Beach, said this isn't going to be easy.
And it certainly is not going to be in the short term as people would like it to have. But again, let's look at what we've been able to do in terms of the last decade and what we're committed to do in the next decade.
But Adrian Martinez, a lawyer at the environmental law firm Earth Justice, says it's not a question of whether the ports are doing something or nothing.
The question is, are they rising to the moment, this air quality crisis we're in? And I think if you talk to the folks who live down in the harbor, talk to the environmental groups, talk to the air agencies, it's clear the answer is no.
He says the will to clean up the air is not as strong as the will to get things done where they need to go fast. For example, Martinez points to how fast the ports responded to President Biden's call to clear out the backlog. In a matter of weeks, they created a fine for containers that sat too long in port yards. But it took 5 years to approve a much smaller fine for high-emission trucks. Clean air advocates say this shows it's time for the local air board to step in and regulate the ports. The Air Board was working on this last summer until the supply chain issues got in the way. Cannon, from the Port of LA, says he knows the portside communities are frustrated and would like to see faster progress.
We would like to go faster too, but just moving the science along does take a little bit of time, and people should know we're doing our best and we're pushing as hard as we can.
The long-term solution for cleaning up the air is to rapidly electrify the port. 5 years ago, the ports volunteered to do this. Their big goals include switching to zero emissions cargo handling equipment by 2030 and to zero emissions cargo trucks by 2035. And they've made some progress. The ports say together they've added 80 pieces of zero emissions equipment, like tractors and forklifts. And there are now 37 zero emissions cargo trucks on the road, joining the diesel fleets that make over 700,000 truck trips each month. But the ports haven't done more because the technology is limited and expensive, says Cannon. And he says requiring more electric trucks would be an unfair burden to the rest of the logistics industry. Until then.
So our goal over the next literally 10 years is just to serve as a test bed for the testing and development of zero emissions equipment.
Hilltop Park in the East Long Beach neighborhood of Signal Hill is true to its name. Rising above the city, it offers a panoramic view of the ports. Farrell Golden, a member of the West Long Beach Neighborhood Association, has lived in the area for 50 years. He shakes his head when he hears that the ports say they have a 10-year plan to clean up the air.
They act like they're running a business. These are public institutions. And we have public institutions assaulting the public.
Golden has long fought for cleaner air in his community alongside his neighbors. He would like to see a third party regulate the port's progress towards zero emissions and have it measured by how many premature deaths are prevented.
We should not be bearing the brunt of the trade industry on our backs. Because that's what it boils down to at the end of the day.
The sun is starting to set as Golden stands, looking out at the ocean, at the sky above a dozen ships anchored at sea.
See the yellowness? The yellowness?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's pointing at the smog, accumulating over the ships, waiting to be blown inland. For KCRW, I'm Megan Jamerson in Long Beach.
Moving on now with Greater LA on KCRW. Happy New Year. I'm Steve Chiotakis. One in five people tested for COVID in LA County are now positive. You heard that right, 20%. And every person who's got it is spreading it to, on average, two other people. That's the highest rate of transmission since the beginning of the pandemic. It's all thanks to the more contagious Omicron variant and, of course, holiday gatherings and traveling, too. Hospitalizations in LA County remain far lower than they were during the winter surge in 2020, but they're up as well, more than doubling in 2 weeks. There is, however, some good news about vaccine boosters for teens. We're going to get all of that now. Paula Cannon is a professor of microbiology and immunology at USC's Keck School of Medicine. Paula, welcome back. Happy New Year to you.
Oh, hey. Hi, Steve. Happy New Year to you.
Are you free of the Rona right now?
I am, amazingly. I think I'm probably I'm probably one of the few people in LA County who doesn't have it. Although, of course, I have psychosomatic corona. I wake up every morning with a sore throat and wonder, is this it?
Yeah. Or sinuses. You know, my sinuses have been going crazy. I've been traveling east, west, you know, seeing my family. And it's like, you know, dry air, wet air, things like that. And it's like, oh, my gosh. I mean, how do you compare, Paula, what we're seeing in L.A. County right now with previous surges that we've experienced?
Well, as you say, it's really kind of it's spreading like wildfire at the moment. You know, the curve is going straight up vertically. But this is kind of reflecting what we've seen, what we're seeing in some other countries as well, you know, especially Denmark and the UK and South Africa, where there's been these incredibly steep increases in COVID cases. And then fingers crossed, especially in South Africa, they've also seen an equally steep decline after, say, a month. So we're kind of cautiously optimistic that this is going to spread like wildfire, but it's going to be, you know, short, sharp and fast. And we'll also kind of get over it maybe by the end of January as well.
The infection rates, Paula, are the highest that they've been since the beginning of the pandemic. But do you think the actual number is even higher given that, you know, people were self-testing over the holidays?
Oh, definitely. Yes. I mean, most of the people I know they have COVID, it's thanks to the miracle of these little, you know, test at home kits. Everybody's been kind of sending me photographs going, is this positive? I'm like, yeah.
Is this all Omicron? Or is the Delta variant still a significant part of it? Or, I mean, do we know?
Yeah, no, definitely Delta is still alive and kicking. You know, one of the challenges is that we don't always distinguish which variant it is, especially if people are doing rapid antigen tests. But it's likely that a large part of this massive increase we've seen recently is being driven and will be continued to be driven by the Omicron variant.
I remember this time last year, at the beginning of 2021, when the surge was just incredible, and we saw hospitalizations, and I remember the numbers, like it was in the upper 7,000s, hospitalizations in LA County. We're at, like, I think 1,600 right now. So we're just a fraction of those hospitalizations. But here we are with a surge that has way more people having the virus than even the surge last year. Is that good news that hospitalizations are not commensurate with what we've seen in the past?
I think we can be cautiously optimistic. I mean, I think people understand that there's a sort of a sliding scale of people get infected, then people get hospitalized, then people are moved to the ICU, and then tragically, in some cases, people die, and that this actually takes a period of weeks. So that while we're in the start or the middle of an increase in cases, we wouldn't expect to see that necessarily show up in hospitalizations just yet. The numbers in the hospitals are kicking up a little bit in LA County, but not yet in terms of ICU admittance, which is good news. And I think everybody is kind of holding their breath, hoping that this maybe stays that way, that despite the massively high numbers of infections, some combination of Omicron possibly being inherently milder and the large number of people in LA County who have some immunity because they've been vaccinated or they have being previously infected, that's going to keep the numbers, the serious numbers, low.
I mean, that's what you keep hearing, right? That Omicron is milder, knock wood, but also way more transmissible than even Delta, right? Mm-hmm. That it's almost like the measles, right? It spreads almost as fast as the measles. And I was like, oh, no, not, you know, I mean, that comparison is really scary. So if you're out there just going about your life, Paula, what kind of advice do you give someone about trying to steer clear of this?
So I think our sort of psychology needs to shift on this a little bit. And so, you know, personally, my thinking has gone from having zero tolerance for being infected to now a sort of resignation that either myself or someone in my family is likely going to get it. But we are making sure that we are all boosted, so that if any of us do get it, there's going to be no bad outcomes. And we're also doing our part, and this is important, to limit the speed at which this virus might spread. So we are back to mostly outside activities, you know, hanging out with much smaller number of people. Had a pretty miserable New Year's Eve, by the way. And definitely doing things like wearing higher quality masks, and you know, we're ordering our groceries online as well. And also using rapid test kits when we do meet up with other people.
The FDA today approved a booster for even younger ages, right? I think between 12 and 15 for the Pfizer shot. Is that right?
That's right, yeah.
What's the latest with that? I mean, who can get boosted right now?
Sure. So now everybody over age 12 can get boosted. With the 12 to 15 year olds. This is good timing because, you know, they first became eligible back in May. So certainly they are now many, you know, many of these teens will be past, you know, the 6 month mark. In addition, Steve, the FDA has also shortened the period they're recommending for you to get boosted from 6 months to 5 months past your last shot.
What do you say, Paula, to people who are like, if the vaccine is so good, why do I have to get boosted at 5 months? Mm-hmm. You know, why do I have to keep taking, how many shots do I have to get? I mean, all of these naysayers who are anti-vax, who are like, you know, it obviously doesn't work because people who are vaxxed are getting it. It obviously isn't as potent as we thought it would be because you have to get boosted after 5 months. What do you say to people like that?
One of the things I say to people is I remind them of, you know, what happens when you get vaccines as a child. You know, many of the vaccines we get are multiple doses. Hepatitis B is 3 shots. DTaP, which is the one that protects you against diphtheria, tetanus, and whooping cough, that's a 5-dose regimen. So having 3, 4, or even 5 shots of vaccines is not abnormal. And it really just reflects the way that each time we give another dose of a vaccine, we're kind of further priming and reminding our immune system that this is a serious threat to us that it needs to kind of pay attention to.
I've seen experts say that this could be the peak of the pandemic, but also perhaps, fingers crossed, prayers to the gods that this could be the beginning of the end of the pandemic. Where are you on that assessment?
I think that's kind of a reasonable thing to assume based on how many people are getting infected, and that what might be happening now is this is a sort of a pivot moment where the coronavirus will now switch to being what we say is endemic, which is that basically everybody's either had it or has been vaccinated. So there are very few people who will be susceptible. The virus is not going to go away. But when people do get it in the future, they'll likely encounter it as children. It won't be serious. And we'll all just grow up with, you know, being vaccinated and immune to this virus, and it will stop being a problem. That's our hope based on how many other viruses over the millennia have become endemic in human populations. But one thing I have learned with the coronavirus is just never say never, you know? Yeah. I mean, let's just see what happens.
There have been a lot of hypotheses over the past 2 years,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. But, you know, Steve, let's end on a hopeful note. You know, what we do know is that if you get boosted, so that's 3 shots of most of the vaccines, you're going to have a very high level of protection against being really sick. And the boosters are now available to you, even to your 12 to 15 year olds. I really hope to see long lines at the chemists, at the pharmacists, people going out and getting their boosters this week.
Paula Cannon, professor of microbiology and immunology at USC's Keck School of Medicine. Paula, Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year, Steve.
It's Greater LA on KCRW. Happy New Year. I'm Steve Chiotakis. They are national football champs once again, but there is trouble from inside the locker room to the president's office at Mater Dei Catholic High School in Orange County. Now, back before the holidays, we talked about a violent hazing attack that took place inside Mater Dei's locker room. It left a player with a traumatic brain injury and a broken nose. Well, now the president there, Father Walter Jenkins, has resigned. Joining us for our weekly chat is LA Times columnist Gustavo Arellano. Happy New Year, Gustavo.
Hola, Steve.
We talked about this story before the holiday break, but remind us the basics here. What happened to get this whole thing started?
So there's a lawsuit against both Mater Dei and the Diocese of Orange, the Catholic Diocese of Orange that Mater Dei belongs to, alleging that a student was part of this hazing ritual for the football team, which left him with brain damage and a broken nose. Video emerged of the fight in question. It was pretty brutal and just really upsetting. And it caused just an uproar everywhere except Mater Dei itself, which the school itself has said, well, we'll investigate it, but, you know, just trust us with our investigation.
All right. Well, Father Jenkins, as I mentioned, has resigned as the president. The school told the LA Times, your newspaper, that he was not fired, that there's, quote, no connection between the litigation and his departure. What do you think of that?
This happened on New Year's Day on the holiday weekend. This is the epitome of a Saturday night massacre. Now, we don't know exactly what happened. The official line is that Father Jenkins went back to his order. He belongs to the Order of Holy Cross, so it goes back to South Bend, Indiana, that this was planned before this whole incident happened. So no harm, no foul. Never mind that Jenkins left his position as a principal in New York, where he was for a couple of years, to come to Modern Day just this past July. So no one is buying this. I mean, again, maybe Jenkins did resign. Maybe he just said, you know what, it's hopeless with Modern Day. But to say that it has nothing to do with the investigation at hand, it's malarkey, as South Bend people would say.
All right. Well, the Orange County Register reports that Jenkins was at the championship game last month and went to congratulate the coach and the coach's family. And that didn't go so well.
Yeah, a cold shoulder, apparently, according to the Register, which broke the story, that Father Jenkins, remember, is the principal at Modern Day, goes and offers congratulations to the wife of the football coach, Bruce Rowlandson, and that she just completely ignored him. Gee, I wonder why would she do that? You're supposed to be celebrating. You're supposed to be part of this big Modern Day family, and you're already shunning one of your own. Gee, that's not suspicious.
And Jenkins also had a, quote, heated discussion with the principal, Francis Clare, right on the field in front of the players and fans. I mean, I guess they didn't see eye to eye, I assume, on the investigation. Is that what's going on there?
Again, no one's talking outside of press releases, but with Frances Clare, she's been part of Modern Day since the late 1980s. She has been an assistant principal for a long time. And under her, you know, in her time, she has seen multiple sex abuse cases happen at Modern Day involving lawsuits. She's been deposed for some of these civil lawsuits. So she knows what her school has covered up in the past. And the fact, again, that she's arguing with Jenkins at a football game, they're probably not arguing about, about theology at that point. You know, it must be something else.
Modern Day's head football coach, as you mentioned, Bruce Rollison, the Register reports that he finally agreed to talk to the police about the incident in which the player was beaten in the locker room. Do we know anything about what he said about the incident? Whether, you know, I mean, he's testified in any way?
Yeah, according to the lawsuit, this all comes from the lawsuit, that Rollinson didn't talk to Santa Ana police, the investigating agency, until 2 months after the incident at hand. And apparently, a couple days after the incident, the beating of the student happened, Rollinson joked to the father of the boy that, oh, you know, hazing incidents like this, if I had a penny for every time this would happen, or a dime, I would be a millionaire. But then, according to the police department, he said, like, I had no idea any of these hazing incidents ever happened. Just basically played, you know, the innocent in all of this.
Some people have been pushing for the school's principal and the coach to be fired as well. That's sort of been the bubbling underneath the surface, right? But again, they're national high school football champs, right? A very successful program. I mean, where do you see this going from here?
When I did my column last month, I talked to John Manley, who's a very famous sex abuse lawyer with lawsuits against the Catholic Church, U.S. gymnastics, and himself a Modern Day grad. And he said it himself. He's like, if a school condoned the rape of its own students, you really think they're going to have a problem with a high school football coach in a hazing incident? Nothing's going to happen, according to him. And right now, the school has entrusted a Sacramento-based law firm to do an investigation into the matter and the culture of Modern Day. But look, Rollinson just won another national championship. Now comes boys basketball, which has also won national championships. At Modern Day, winning is what counts. And, you know, victims, alleged victims, no, the quicker you could shunt them off, the better it is for the school. Because why get in the middle of any championships?
Well, and to be clear, Father Jenkins hasn't said anything, right, about his resignation just a couple of days ago. He did launch an investigation, and quickly, Gustavo, he launched an investigation into the incident and about the athletic culture of the school.
Yeah, no, like I said, the Sacramento-based law firm is going to start investigating actually this month, conveniently enough, when Father Jenkins is no longer part of Modern Day.
Yeah, resigned just a couple of days ago. Gustavo Arellano, columnist for the LA Times with this week's Orange County Line. Gustavo, feliz año.
And prospero año to you. Gracias.
You see, I turned the tables. Happy New Year. There you go. Gustavo Arellano, thanks so much. We do appreciate it. That's going to do it for us today. Of course, a busy first show of the new year. Tomorrow, like everything else in the pandemic, a marine mammal sanctuary in Greater LA took a beating, even had financial problems, but it has reopened. It's focusing now on the animals that need rehabbing right now. That's tomorrow on this program. Catherine Barnes, Crystal Voss, Nihar Patel, Vincent Nguyen, Sonia Geis, John Meek, Phil Richards, Amy Ta, Holly Adams, and Christian Bordahl all helped put this evening's episode together. I'm Steve Chiotakis again. Happy New Year to you. Have a great night.